What people have said to us about you, you're a serial liar, you're a psychopath. You think you're smarter than everybody else. Mm-hmm. You're brutal. Mm-hmm. You're capable of acts of appalling savagery. You're a murderer. When you get in there, she'll try and manipulate you. Mm-hmm. But she's a cold-blooded killer. That's what they say about you. Mm-hmm. How does that make you feel?
I just feel that people don't know me.
Did the state prove to you that I was there on that day? Well, they can't do that.
To brutally beat and stab Annalisa the way that she did and watch her die, and then to attack someone like she did her husband, takes a unique personality.
She's the one you don't expect, educated and comes from a good background. She's the one that everybody goes, it's not her.
Sheila Davalloo killed one person and almost killed another person.
I think she's probably one of the most dangerous people I've ever seen.
Crime scene is about half a mile from here, right?
Yes.
But what strikes me immediately, it's just so peaceful.
On that day, the complex was filled with landscapers, FedEx, UPS, deliveries.
A lot of busy people.
Yes,
there, right?
Cleaning people, yes.
Which is easy to mingle in if you want to just keep incognito.
On November the 8th, 2002, Annalisa Raimondo, a rising star in the pharmaceutical industry, chose to work from home.
Hello.
Yes, hello. I think the guy attacked my neighbor.
You think someone attacked your neighbor?
That decision would cost Annalisa her life.
Okay, can you tell me what the guy looks like? What does he look like?
Homicide detective Greg Holt was one of the first on the scene.
Right here, this is where it all happened. So that stairwell over there, that leads up to Annalisa's apartment, right?
Correct. The responding officer, he was a 20-year veteran, had been to several homicide shooting scenes prior, and that never left him, with the multiple stabs and even a stab in the face.
Just talk me through what you think happened in the events leading up to Annalisa's death.
I think Davalloo went into work that morning because she had to determine if Annalisa was going to work at home or here. And when she determined that Annalisa was working for home, that was the perfect opportunity. So she came in through the unmanned security gate, parked somewhere in the parking lot. I think she walked right up, knocked on Annalisa's door. Once she got in, I envisioned Davalloo slammed that door and the blitz attack was on. Annalisa literally fought for her life. She was a small woman, but she was in very good shape. Plants were turned over, furniture was turned over, and you could tell that they had gone around in a circle in that foyer. She was stabbed all over, and ultimately Annalisa sustained a cranial injury, probably from a dumbbell that we found in the foyer that Annalisa used for workout. This was targeted, total, brutal rage.
You've never quite got over this case, have you? I mean, this lived with you for a long time, and it lives with you now.
This will be the one that cops say they'll always remember. This is the one for me.
At the time of the murder, Sheila Davalloo also worked in the pharmaceutical industry. Highly educated, and earning a six-figure salary, she lived in an affluent area of New York State. She seemed an unlikely murderer. But of all the women I've interviewed in this series, Sheila Davalou is the most dangerous. I have been granted 1 hour with her inside Bedford Hills Maximum Security Prison.
You've never given an interview, and you've been here 15 years now. Why have you now decided to talk?
I haven't given one before because I felt that it really never served any purpose, because my, battle is in the court, is with the law. That's where my focus has always been and still is.
As we sit here, you're in the middle of a 25-year sentence for the attempted murder of your husband. The moment that finishes, you then commence a 50-year sentence for the murder of a young woman. You maintain that you're completely innocent, don't you, of everything?
No, that's absolutely not right.
What do you admit to in terms of guilt?
I'm far from innocent. However, I think the story is nobody's really care to delve into the story to see if there is another possibility.
Here's the theory, that in the end, the detectives and the jury, everybody basically concluded was what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You fell in love with this guy at work, you're in an unhappy marriage, and you want to be with this guy, but you can't because he has this other girl he's in love with. And when you confront her and tell her about the affair, a fight starts, and you end up killing her. That's what everybody believes happened.
It's not the truth, though.
Isn't it?
No.
At first, police struggled to find any motive for Annalisa's killing. It would take 10 years before Sheila was convicted of her murder.
This case was an extraordinary one for you. Why did it mean so much to you?
When we sat down with Dr. and Mrs. Raimondo for the first time, I looked over and Mrs. Raimondo is looking at me, and she trusted us with this investigation of her daughter's brutal killing. And that just grabbed a hold of me and said, we've got to run this down somehow. Annalisa was such an intelligent, sweet, kind young lady who was living a good life. No reason to believe that she was going to be targeted. Great career ahead of her, and this is just senseless.
Have you encountered a more dangerous person than Sheila Davalou?
Although she comes across very, very mild-mannered, psychologically, I think she's probably one of the most dangerous people I've ever seen.
They say that you left your building at work and that you had enough time between leaving and returning a few hours later to have committed this murder. There's enough time for you to have physically done it.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's very important in a circumstantial case for the prosecutor to place me at the scene of the crime.
So your conviction now is that you just went from work and you went home.
I shopped. And I used to shop at a nearby health food store, and I went home. And my towel...
You never went anywhere near Annalisa's apartment?
Absolutely not. I am certain that I wasn't there in that area. My cell phone records shows that I have made a phone call 2 minutes after that 911 call at 12:15 out of Porchester, New York. If the prosecutor had cell tower records that would place me at the scene of the crime, he would have used them.
Cell tower records were never used at trial to place Sheila in Annalisa's apartment. but she could still have been there. Trying to make sense of this murder seems to come down to this question. Is Sheila Davalloo really capable of viciously stabbing a defenseless young woman multiple times? In the weeks after the murder, she wasn't even a suspect.
Greg, the strange thing was after Annalisa died, within a few hours, her boyfriend, Nelson, turns up. And his behaviour is just a little odd.
You come home from work, you pull into your condo, which is a very quiet area, you park your car, and all you see are police cars, crime scene vans. Your average person would just charge that police line and want to get into their house, want to see if their soon-to-be fiancé is okay. He went in the boat shed, laid down, and went to sleep.
He, for quite a while, was your prime suspect because of his behavior until you established a cast-iron alibi for him.
Correct.
Once you ruled out Nelson, you really hit a bit of a wall because there's no obvious suspect after that, right?
We had absolutely nothing.
Then comes this breakthrough, this extraordinary breakthrough,
yep,
which involves a completely different crime, mm-hmm, way away from Stanford. Tell me about the breakthrough.
I was home, and I get a phone call from one of the sergeants in Major Crimes, and he said, Greg, suit up and come on in. I'll never forget it. Quote, Annalisa's breaking wide open.
20 miles from the site of Annalisa's murder, a man had been found in a hospital car park with multiple stab wounds. This attack, seemingly unrelated to Annalisa's, eventually led police to a vital piece of evidence connecting the two cases. Within 1 hour, detectives had a suspect for the man's stabbing. His wife, Sheila Davalloo.
This was a professional, educated woman in a marriage who had tricked her husband into being in a position where she could stab him multiple times, including once through the heart. That is uncommon, to say the least.
5 months after Annalisa was stabbed to death, police arrested Sheila Davalloo. She had stabbed her husband, Paul, and tried to kill him.
He comes back to the house that day, and they start playing a game.
Right.
What is that game?
Sheila says, let's play this game. I heard about it at work with a bunch of girls. I think it would be fun for us to reconnect. So Paul does anything because he sees his marriage a little bit starting to part. So she says, the idea is we'll use handcuffs. We'll handcuff each other. And so Sheila starts. She's handcuffed. Paul handcuffs her to the chair and blindfolds her. And he's supposed to get items throughout the home, and she's supposed to guess what they are. And that's what they do. He rubs them on her face or on her stomach, and she's supposed to say, you know, the dog collar. And so that was the game that they were playing.
Joe, I'm not here to judge you, okay? I'm not at all. I just want to...
No, I mean, you think I did it.
Well, I think something went wrong, yeah.
Something went terribly wrong, but I didn't...
I'm not saying I did it with intent to hurt him. I'm not saying that. I just got to account for... He's giving me a story that we're playing a game and everything was fine. And then he gets hurt. That what she can understand, an accident happened, he's blindfolded, he said, you know, something went wrong, and, you know, but I'm trying to understand the second stab wound, which I know didn't occur at the same time the first one did. And I know he didn't do it to himself because it wasn't possible, that it was possible for him to do it to himself.
Tell me about Paul. What kind of relationship did you have with him? You were with him for years before you got married.
Paul and I had a very weird relationship. This is the part where I think through tacit agreement or collusion, we had decided to not discuss at all because it's very embarrassing. And
you play games?
Yes.
It's not that embarrassing. A lot of married couples do that.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it's as uncommon as you think.
It's uncommon from what I've heard in terms of, you know, owning handcuffs and...
It's not.
Okay, you're tapes, if you say so. It's not something you want to mention in a court of law, I think.
All right, did you say anything suggestive or anything like that to your wife?
No.
While you were doing this? Did you ever slip any item underneath your clothes or anything like that?
No. At that point of our marriage, we weren't even romantic anymore, so there was no sexual aspect to the game at all.
The first part of the interview that I did with Sheila, she was under the impression that Paul had died. She didn't know he had survived. We kind of let her think that he didn't make it to surgery. I think she thought she would tell us a story, Paul didn't make it, and we would never be none the wiser.
What position did she take up on?
She was sitting on my midsection, pretty much right on my chest area, my legs kind of underneath her.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually touched the item to my face. I couldn't identify what it was. All of a sudden, I felt like a large thrust on my chest. It felt like a heavy weight was dropped on my chest.
He's very strong. I know, I understand that, but his upper body wouldn't have been able to come in. He's sitting on top of himself.
Yeah.
So he can't
hide, but his chest was. He got up and asked for the chest was sitting tonight. Because I was still holding him. I
said, so he's laying on the floor handcuffed. I can't lift my upper body other than handcuffed.
Oh, yeah, he did. He lifted his whole body and the chair and sat on the floor.
She stabbed him.
She stabbed him. And then while he's kind of trying to, you know, get his bearings, because he was just stabbed, he feels an even heavier thrust to his chest.
She said, "Oh my God, I think I hurt you. You're bleeding." And I started to get winded. I started to sweat a little bit.
Bleeding from the stab wounds and struggling to breathe, Paul convinced his wife to take him to hospital. But it appeared that Sheila had no intention of seeking medical help.
She exited the car, came around to the rear driver's side door. As she's moving my foot, I see her face, like with an angry expression, and she lunges at me.
You looked at her face, and you saw what kind of expression?
Like a distressed, angry type look. I didn't see the knife at that point, but I felt a sharp jab into my chest. And then when she recoiled, I saw the knife.
And what happens?
He starts screaming, and he realizes that he has to fight for his life. And he gets the knife away from her, so she can't get it back. And he starts telling people, you know, help, help. And finally, people do come, and she jumps in the car and takes off.
You drive to the back, and Paul's in the back seat of the car. You then open the back door, and you stab him again. That's not part of any game now.
No.
Why did you stab him again?
We had another altercation there, and we had a lot of words, and we wanted to talk. We were talking about what to say and how to tell people what happened, and we had a big disagreement, and I still had the knife in my hand, and I threatened him with the knife, and he took the knife. He threatened to take the knife out of my hand, that he was going to kill me, and I just lunged at him, and he grabbed the knife out of my hand and threw it away, and I have no good explanation for any of it.
I mean, the fairly obvious one is, if you're not you, is that you're trying to kill him because you've had two goes at it in this game,
mm-hmm.
and he's still alive, so he can tell perhaps the real story. And the way to stop him telling the real story is to finish him off.
True. However, I tried very hard in desperation to get him out of the handcuffs. And that's contradictory to somebody wanting to kill somebody.
But Sheila, you stabbed him in the heart.
I don't think I knew where I was stabbing him. I wasn't aiming.
Why are you still stabbing him at all, given you've already stabbed him twice and he's now at a hospital to receive emergency treatment, and now you think the best way for him to get treatment is to stab him in the heart? How does any of this make sense?
No, it really doesn't make sense. You're absolutely right. I just, I think I wasn't, I think we were just very confused, both of us, and he was...
Well, I bet he's confused.
Yeah.
He's wondering why his wife's stabbing him to death.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's confusing.
None of this makes sense.
So we can't go by that.
I mean, if you're
saying I stabbed him twice in the house and then the third time in the hospital,
why wouldn't I stab him
the
third time in the hospital?
I'll just stab him at all.
You know, I mean,
like
that.
I mean, we have no problems at all.
The evidence from the very beginning was overwhelming that she had stabbed Paul and almost killed him. You stab someone in the heart, it actually nicks the heart. That's a very precise act. And the fact that he was immobile and she stabbed him in that area three times, one time nicking the heart, that's a very precise act that really shows intent to kill, because there's no other intent that's consistent with stabbing someone in the heart. She doesn't appear like someone who would be a threat. She's not a physically imposing person. She speaks in a very educated way, and she doesn't come off as the type of person who would be capable of extreme violence, which she clearly was when we looked at the evidence.
My inclination would not be that I could imagine you stabbing somebody as brutally to death mm-hmm. as Annalisa was stabbed to death.
Mm-hmm.
Just doesn't seem like you would do that. But then I know about what you did to Paul.
I think that plays, you're absolutely right, I think that plays...
But why wouldn't it play into anybody's mind that you are clearly capable
mm-hmm.
of committing an act of savagery involving a knife?
He had used it earlier.
On you?
Yes.
He'd used a knife on you?
Yes.
How?
He ended up cutting me with the knife. And
where did he cut you?
Right in the chest. And I still have a scar of it. And I think that I think the pain was just too much for me at the time. I was always on the receiving end of a beating. And
So your husband would repeatedly beat you?
No, I mean, it was consensual.
He beat you consensually?
Yes.
How? With his fists? What?
Yes.
He'd punch you?
Slap, punch, and I think at that point with the knife, it just, I couldn't take it anymore. I just wanted him to see how it felt.
I mean, he's never said he's ever hit you like that. In fact, he said the complete opposite. He said in court, under oath, that you had never shown any violence and there'd been no violence in this marriage ever.
I don't think we thought of it as violence.
Well, being punched and kicked and slapped and stabbed.
Yeah.
Fairly violent, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think we thought of it as part of the game.
But was he lying in court then, under oath? Because that's obviously a pretty serious offense.
I think neither of us wanted to talk about that. I deferred to his testimony.
I've interviewed Sheila Davila. She says that they had played this game many times before, but it had become increasingly violent, that Paul would repeatedly punch her, including in the face.
Gosh.
He would slap her, and that she believed on that day the level of violence after he took the knife to her first and cut her across her chest had reached such a point that she flipped and she attacked him to defend herself.
Never once did she even mention that. She had no injuries on her when we arrested her. Anybody that ever met Paul would never believe that story. If for 5 minutes you could meet Paul and know that wasn't true. And I say that knowing that behind closed doors things happen in people's homes. If you could put a gun to Paul's head, he probably wouldn't punch her in the face. Paul's just not that type of person.
Not a violent man.
Not at all. She thinks she's truly going to fool us all.
The crucial moment of detective work by you, you find her phone. What does it have on it that rings alarm bells to you?
The last call on her phone was to Nelson Sessler. Well, actually, it just said Nelson. We didn't know who he was at the time. It just said a call to Nelson.
So you're immediately curious?
Yeah, because I'm nosy.
Detective Carpentieri came here with a phone, a cell phone that had a person's name in it from a crime scene they had over in New York. She asked if anybody knows anything about this Nelson Sessler. One of our guys here, Frank Lacona, says, wait a minute, that's the boyfriend in the Annalisa Raimondo homicide.
They let me look at the crime scene photos and they let me listen to the 911 tape.
Yeah, hello. I think the guy is attacked my neighbor.
Told them right away. I said, I just interviewed her for 10 hours straight. That is Sheila Davalou.
Nelson, who is Annalisa's boyfriend, is in Sheila's phone. There's got to be something going on here. Well, I believe Sheila probably decided, I want to be with Sessler. And she went to the house and confronted Annalisa, and things got out of hand. And she had the knife with her or something. She used whatever she could. There were dumbbells there. There was, like I said, it was a brutal scene. A lot of things, blood all over. And did what she did and left.
The big breakthrough in this case, as far as the police are concerned, comes when you are arrested in connection with what happened with Paul. And there's a detective who picks up your phone and sees that you called this guy Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
And they confront Nelson. And eventually he concedes that he'd been having a relationship with you.
My relationship with Nelson was very much an affair. But I think in my defense, Paul and I had already started talking about divorce because we had grown apart way before I had met Nelson.
You really like this guy, right? I mean, you fall for Nelson.
I mean, I didn't see it that way. I didn't see falling for him. I think we weren't. He was very intelligent. You know, he's a good-looking man, very funny, witty. However, I think...
You're in love with him. I don't know why you're shy of admitting that.
I didn't see it that way. I didn't see Nelson as... I could have... If I wanted to be with Nelson, I could have easily divorced my husband.
Well, except Nelson's with Annalisa.
True.
You can only be with him if she's not on the scene. How do you categorize Sheila Davalou?
She's very calculating and manipulative. She can use people to get what she wants.
So when Sheila Davalou looks me in the eye and says, it was nothing really important, I wasn't in love with him, certainly wasn't obsessed with him.
Her obsession was extreme, to the point where she was Googling every street name, Nelson. So she went to see a doctor, a psychiatrist, in September, months before Annalise was killed, because of her obsession. I mean, she was listening to all his voicemails at work. Nelson Sessler would be on a plane to Vegas, and all of a sudden, Sheila Davalou was sitting next to him. And she's like, how did we end up on the same plane?
Sheila was now the prime suspect in Annalise's murder. But detectives in Connecticut still had no hard evidence. Until a sample of her DNA was taken when she was arrested for stabbing her husband.
The real meat on the bone came with the tiny piece of blood DNA sample that you found on this tap.
Correct.
At Annalisa's home. Tell me about that.
Tom called me one day and said, Greg, are you going to be home? Can I come over? And I said, oh, of course you can come over. And he knocked on the door, and he looked at me, and I'm, what, Tom? He goes, I'll never forget this. He goes, we got her, quote unquote. And I said, what? He goes, the DNA came back, and it's Sheila's. That was overwhelming.
Are you 99.9% certain that that was her DNA, or are you 100% certain?
100% certain, absolutely. There's no question in my mind. when someone is utilizing a knife in an attack, it's very common as you stab and you get blood on your hand for that hand to slip down the knife and you cut yourself. I know she cut herself there. Then she went into the bathroom to at least clean up so I can get out of here in broad daylight. But I'm sure that she had blood. I'm sure she was disheveled. I'm sure that, Annalisa had pulled her hair. This was a drastic fight. I'm sure that she was the perpetrator in this crime. She was there, she was injured. She bled in that sink. There was still work to be done, but we knew we now had our perp.
The obvious question, and it was one that the jury found overwhelming in terms of evidence, how could your DNA be anywhere near Annalisa's apartment if you had only been there once before? How do you explain it?
I think it was the summer before. So,
but way too long for DNA to exist.
Way too long. You're absolutely right.
You accept that. You accept it's way too long. You accept it couldn't have been from when you went there to the housewarming, right?
Right. In fact, I've never been in that bathroom before.
Right. So you've never been in the bathroom.
Right.
You'd been to the apartment once for a housewarming, but way before the time that any DNA could have
been.
Absolutely. Right. So you accept that.
Yes.
So how do you explain that your DNA is on that bathroom tap?
Of the 50 or so sealed pieces of evidence, only one piece of evidence left the crime lab. And that one piece of evidence happened to be the sink handle that left the crime lab and was resubmitted to the crime lab. And I've been trying to, you know, rack my brain and try to figure out why.
Even if you buy into your theory that there was somehow some deliberate tampering to frame you, here's what I can't work out. You were not a suspect. Mm-hmm. It was a long time before anybody ever raised your name in connection with what had happened.
If they had the DNA, and if it was conclusive, they didn't come forward with the arrest warrant until 5 years after.
They didn't want to rush it from their point of view. I just know what they say. You were doing a 25-year sentence. Mm-hmm. They had plenty of time, and they decided to arrest you when they felt they had the evidence they needed. And it was pretty compelling to a jury. The other thing that was compelling was the 911 call that was made after Annalisa was killed.
Hello?
Yes, hello. I think the guy is attacked my neighbor.
You think someone attacked your neighbor?
Yes.
First and foremost, I'd like to thank God for giving me the courage and the strength to stand here today.
This is a case where I am being accused of killing somebody. Did the state prove to you that I was there on that day? Well, they can't do that.
Almost 10 years after Annalisa's murder, Sheila Davalloo was finally brought to trial. She faced the possibility of a life behind bars. Yet she took the extraordinary decision to defend herself.
Good afternoon, Mr. Sessler. You had lied to the police?
Yes, I wasn't forthcoming to the police.
Okay. And what was the nature of that lie?
I hadn't told them that you had been my girlfriend in the past and we had a relationship.
Sheila is definitely a smart person. There's no doubt about that. She was successful in her career. She was able to plan out horrendous acts, but she was able to plan them out in a logical fashion and for a while get away with one murder and almost get away with what was almost another murder. I'm pretty sure that she thought this was her best shot, but it is always, always a terrible decision to defend yourself in court.
She did seem like a normal, she was sympathetic, yeah. She was smiling, very polite, well presented in court. dressed humbly.
You're sitting there being presented with this evidence of a brutal crime. Bloody pictures, all kinds of biological evidence, that kind of thing. And then you turn to look at somebody who's talking in the courtroom, and it becomes hard to tie those two together. It's hard to think that anybody that you would ever talk to or listen to would be capable of something like that, who's there in the same room as you.
Hello?
Yes, hello. I think the guy attacked my neighbor.
You think someone attacked your neighbor?
Yes.
We heard the 911 call early during the trial, and then every day is a huge amount of information to retain. So at the end of the trial, we wanted to hear this recording again.
I saw a guy go into her apartment. He was in there and he attacked her. I heard yelling.
Hello?
At the beginning of the trial, I don't think we had heard Sheila Davalou's own voice enough to make our own decision as to what we heard through the 911 call. Listening to it again at the end was actually, it was shocking because you could hear really her voice. I mean, that was my experience. I could really recognize her voice.
The jury concluded that person who made the call was you.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that. Is that true?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what the jurors have said afterwards, mm-hmm. that they believed it was you. But do you know why they think it was you? Because you decided to defend yourself, they listened to your voice every day.
Mm-hmm.
If you hadn't defended yourself, those jurors might have acquitted you.
I find that very odd, because that's the reason I defended myself, because I wanted them to hear me. And those who knew me...
But you basically convicted yourself by doing that.
Those who knew me intimately and closely disagreed.
Yeah, but it
doesn't sound like me.
I've listened to it, and I've only been with you for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you to me.
Yeah. Well, I think my husband, who was the closest person to me, said that it could be her trying to disguise her voice. That's odd. I think...
Well, not really. I mean, if you've just killed somebody and you're trying to build an alibi...
But that's conjecture.
You would, of course. But yeah. We're not in court now. It's just me and you.
Right. I think that if you're saying that it could be her, you're not decisively saying it is her. And that's very odd for somebody's husband not to be able to pinpoint his own wife as the caller. He's not defending me.
Well, he couldn't be sure, he said.
And that's... I mean, you are sure.
I'm not sure. I just said it sounds like you.
Right.
I think the DNA evidence is compelling.
Right.
I think the 911 call sounds like you. And I believe you tried to kill your husband.
But you divorce a husband. You know, I am the breadwinner. I'm supporting my husband. I have the higher income. He's living in my house. I didn't have to get rid of him. I could have divorced him. It would have been cheaper. It would have been easier. I gained nothing by killing Paul.
I think what I saw above everything else is she seemed to be somebody who thought she was smarter than everybody else around her. She thought she knew better, and that came out when she was defending herself.
It fit a consistent pattern that she was having an affair, and she eliminated the fiancé of the man she liked, and then tried to kill her husband. She tried to get rid of both people that were standing in the way of her being with Nelson Sessler.
The defendant, Sheila Davalou, please rise and face the jury. What say you, Mr. Foreperson? Is she guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
You don't get the impression of somebody incredibly dangerous, and yet she clearly is very dangerous.
I think she can ramp up that danger in her to a point where it becomes open physical aggression, I think she's probably one of the most dangerous people I've ever seen.
You're in here now for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
What is life like for you in here?
Life is decent. It's peaceful. I'm very active in the community. I'm at peace, and I'm fighting my case.
When your parents come to see you, it must break their heart, doesn't it? I mean, there was this brilliant, beautiful daughter
thank you.
Who had everything to live for, who had a great job,
mm-hmm.
was married to a good guy. You lived in a lovely community, nice place.
Yeah.
Two dogs, everything was...
Yeah.
And now this. But the saddest thing for me is your apparent self-delusion,
mm-hmm.
that you've maybe convinced yourself you didn't do this.
No, because I didn't. I mean, I don't have a split personality disorder or anything like that. I wasn't there. It doesn't really affect me in any way if people believe me or not.
But you're doing an interview because presumably you think people should believe you.
If you were to believe me, it wouldn't help me in any way. So I'm not sitting here really to try to convince you. I'm just telling you how it is and what it was. And it's not pretty. Still, my story is not eloquent. It's not, I'm not denying what I did to my husband. I did not want to kill him. I am beyond relieved that at least I don't have two murders on my rap sheet. However, I will, till the last day that I'm alive, be working on proving my innocence in Connecticut.
Oh, I think she's very dangerous. I do. I think if she was out, she'd probably do it again. Find somebody to be with for a while and then find somebody else, and something probably would happen.
The deterrent effect of any sentence imposed really has very little meaning here other than to send a message that it cannot be tolerated in our society. That cold, calculated nature, a terrible act that occurred, cannot be accepted by the people.
You know, I'm hoping for the best. I'm still very hopeful, and I feel positive still.
Sheila, thank you.
Thank you.